Congratulations! You're listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
In the studio with us is a program head for the University of Otago's net zero carbon by 2030 goal. He is the manager of that program, and he's here to talk about the benefits of electrification as there is an electrified Dunedin kind of showcase happening on the 28th, which is next Tuesday. Good morning to you, Craig. How are we?
Kia ora, Zach. I'm great, thank you.
Good to have you in the studio. I didn't see your last name, Craig Cliff.
Yeah.
Craig Cliff. Do you have a quiz of Craig Cliff notes because you love books?
No, I often get emails saying hi Cliff because two first names. So
that's a good situation to have. 50-50 I love two first name situations. It's a good time. Now, Craig, you're not only the head of the University of Otago's program to reduce carbon emissions by 2030 and make it net zero, but you are also a fiction writer. You were the Robert Burns Fellow from 2017 to 2018.
Yeah, that's right.
You've done a few books. The last one that came out in 2019, Nailing Down the Saint. Have you been doing a lot of writing since then?
I have been doing some writing since then, but just this moment I'm doing a lot of reading. So I'm a fiction judge for this year's Ockham New Zealand Book Awards. So there's 52 books that have been submitted, 52 fat novels and short story collections, so there's a lot of reading, which is an amazing thing to sort of call as work, in inverted commas. But yeah, it takes a lot of time, so that's my free time at the moment is reading rather than writing.
And you also have a family to look after.
Yeah.
So you've got a lot, you've got between reading this work and then family, you know, fair enough. Now, this public showcase that's happening next Tuesday is part of a nationwide sort of national campaign to encourage Aotearoa to electrify, promoting key benefits like cost saving and reducing carbon emissions. What are the other benefits of electrifying our power?
There's lots of other things that maybe you don't think about straight away. So there's some health benefits. When you think about cooking, if you've got gas hobs, there's been some things in the media recently about the health impacts of all the particulate matter that's released when cooking with gas. If you're cooking with induction cooktops, it's really quick, and you don't have those same particles coming out. My father-in-law, he's of a generation where he likes his grunty cars and those sorts of things, but he got a
likes lead paint in his asbestos.
Yeah. And he got they were doing up their kitchen, and he got a test little plug-in an induction hob. He's also a coffee snob. He's an Italian, so he's got to do it that way. And he's a convert straight away when you could see how fast you could boil water with
real
induction hobs. Also, driving petrol cars around, it's not just the CO2 that's emitted, there's other nasties that come out. So electric vehicles burn cleaner, the tailpipes just emit water. So it's, there's health benefits alongside of the cost savings and the environmental benefits.
For sure. It's funny, yesterday we had a quiz on the program and I mentioned how they used to have lead in petrol, which increased blood lead levels to an unhealthy amount. And coincidentally, the highest decade of blood lead level concentration in the US was also the highest decade for crime, because lead made people crazy.
Yeah, so like it's Detroit.
There's a whole
history of that being the centre of the auto industry. And
violence. A lot of violence. Now, if everyone can save by switching to electricity and cutting emissions, is a lovely byproduct of that. Why haven't we done so already?
Yeah, it's a great question, and a lot of it comes down to finance. Like, it does cost money up front to switch out your gas hobs for an induction cook hob or to purchase an electric vehicle. You know, they don't come cheap. And if you're lucky enough to be looking at purchasing a new vehicle, you know, there's often a premium up front to purchase the electric version over the hybrid or the fossil fueled version. But you do earn that money back over time through the savings and operating costs. But you know, the more strapped for cash you are now, like, those benefits of saving money in the future are great, but you just can't stretch to be able to do that. So financing is a big part of the kaupapa of how do we make it easier for everyone, and we spread the benefits of electrification across the socioeconomic spectrum. So, and again, at the moment, like, the banks are sort of playing ball and providing green loans. If you have a mortgage,
then
you can get really low, like 1% interest rates, to buy an EV or put solar panels on your roof or put in a heat pump and more efficient heating and those sorts of things. But if you're renting, then what mortgage are you putting that onto? So I think there's still some work to be done with the New Zealand and you know, under this current government, they've taken things like the EV subsidy away. But just as quickly, a different government could put those sorts of things back in and start to change the economics of this so that you can make those savings in your daily bills by getting over that hump of that initial capital expenditure.
I mean, I think there's a big worry with things like climate change and maybe the increase in conflict we've seen globally. I mean, Europe's been worried about its energy independence for some time. How energy independent is Aotearoa? We do rely on some fossil fuels, and those are mostly imports.
Yeah.
And our renewables seem to be climbing, but how energy independent are we?
Yeah, and sometimes people think about electricity as our energy supply, and about 80% of the electrons in our national grid come from renewable sources, so lots of hydro, some geothermal, some solar and some wind.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's some fossil fuels that are burned, particularly in winter, to kind of shave the peak off. So it's about 80% on average. Once upon a time, the government had a target to get the electricity grid to 100% renewable by the end of the decade, and they've sort of walked away from that, which is unfortunate.
By the end of 2030?
We'll get there eventually. But that's only one part of the energy equation. So, like, transport requires energy to move around, and so that does rely on fossil fuels. Industry still, to a degree, relies on fossil fuels. There's been some great progress made recently. So the steel mill up north, investing in an electric arc furnace, so that because steel takes a lot of heat to be able to produce. So in the past, that was burning coal, and those sorts of things are transitioning to electricity.
Mm-hmm.
Our energy mix is only about half electrified and half fossil fuels at the moment, there or thereabouts. And so, as you say, we're importing those fossil fuels to a large degree. We do get some gas from our gas fields, but we don't actually need it. We've got the sunlight, we've got wind, we've got water, we've got the geothermal energy. So it's a matter of investing locally to harness that to get us to closer to 100% fully renewable for our energy mix and fully sovereign in terms of how we power our machines and we move ourselves around and we do the things that we need to do.
Mm-hmm. Now, according to the Ministry of Business, Innovation and Employment, last year saw 45.5% of New Zealand's primary energy supply coming from renewable sources, record high, mind you. A total energy consumption dropped 2.1%, and natural gas consumption in the economy fell to its lowest since 2011. Does this mean that when it comes to meeting our climate targets, where energy generation is concerned, that we're getting there? I mean, I know you mentioned that the 2030 target was dropped, but do we think that that New Zealand is just getting that way naturally?
I think it's inevitable that we will move that way over time. I would like to see the pace be faster.
Yeah,
it does help. So, you know, day job at the University of Otago trying to decarbonise across all of our emissions areas. If the energy system in New Zealand, which we will draw on to do some of our things, if that gets greener faster, then that makes our life easier. It makes households' lives easier. It makes businesses' lives easier, so that there's one less thing that we have to do in isolation. So at scale, it's much more efficient to do some of these things. So if the grid becomes green, if we have this great network of EV charging facilities, and we can eliminate things like range anxiety, which now with some of these new models of EVs,
doesn't
you
really
can drive
even,
for 600 Ks without a problem.
Yeah, BYDs.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah. So some of it's like, it's kind of a nice to have, a nice charging network around the country, because a lot of times you're just charging at home and you're charging on with smart devices that can kind of optimize when it charges to when the energy's cheapest. And also things are getting smarter and smarter. So these electric machines, one of the other benefits is when we have there might be a grid outage and you can start to power your house back from your car using that battery. You can take your car camping and that can boil the kettle when you're out at a rest stop somewhere. So there's all these other sort of things that, you know, this future that we're heading towards, that we should be heading towards quite quickly. There's not a lot of downsides to this, but as you mentioned, upfront costs, and those investments from the government and those other big players are needed.
Crucial, yeah. According to a study looking into the local energy consumption and generation in Otipoti from 2020 to 2021, the financial year, 13% of the energy used in Dunedin was locally generated, those being biomass and electricity. The electricity was mostly generated from the Waipori Hydro Dam and the Mahinarangi Wind Farm. Have we generated more local energy, like, per year since then? Are we getting into more local schemes, or is it still mostly coming from the national grid?
It's pretty similar. I think we're making incremental improvements. Mm. The thing that I've noticed just in the last 2 years is the really rapid growth in residential rooftop solar.
Mm.
And that the wisdom used to be, so I came down to Dunedin in 2021 after I was here for the Burns in 2017, kind of caught the Dunedin bug, mm-hmm. found an excuse to come back in 2021. But at that time, the wisdom was, you know, it's just not sunny enough in Dunedin for rooftop solar to make sense. But just the cost of the solar panels has continued to plummet. And they've also got better. So it's one of those, you know, things don't get cheaper and better, but this is one of those cases where that's true. And so the economics do work out now for lots of homes in Otipoti, Dunedin. And so you can see that growth is happening. So I'm not sure about how that's showing up on the sort of the total numbers in terms of the percentage of where our energy is coming from, but I see that as a positive trend.
Mm. Of the 13% of the locally generated energy used in Dunedin during the 2020 financial year, biomass, mm-hmm. mainly firewood and wood chips, accounted for 7%. Does electrification mean we'll see less of that kind of energy generation? Will it come at the cost of that?
Yeah, it's interesting. In the university's case, so we used to rely on a lot of coal in the district energy scheme to feed some of our large buildings here on the Dunedin campus.
Mm.
And that was converted to wood chips for the university, so to create the steam and the heat to feed lots of the med school and some of the main buildings on the main part of campus. So that was a really good step. It significantly reduced our emissions. But there's only so much byproduct from the forestry industry that we can source sustainably. And so there is a sort of a limit to what we could rely on biomass.
There's a more boutique kind of form of energy generation than, you know, a more sustainable version.
And so 5-6 years ago when we were kind of doing the business case about how do we get rid of coal, that was the obvious option. But with the advancement in some of these electric boilers and... you know, there's lots of investment in R&D in the electrification space. And so some of the products that weren't available 5 years ago, we can now swap in an electric version. And that's a lot of the research that Rewiring Aotearoa has done. They've got their report on, it kind of talks about all of the machines that we use in Aotearoa and which ones are ready to be swapped out with an electric version at the moment. And it's a really high proportion. It's like 85% of the machines that we rely on can be swapped out for an electric version today.
Mm.
And it's just some of those tricky industrial processes where they need really, really high heats that we might have to wait a few more years. But it's definitely, yeah, I can see a process where over time, it just won't make sense to invest in a new wood chip boiler. There's an electric option for you straight away.
Yeah.
So you don't need that as the transition process, which we've been using wood as a transition fuel.
Mm-hmm. It's going to become antiquated, in other words, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And like we have to, you've set up a system where you've got a coal boiler, and coal, for all of its problems in terms of emissions, is kind of a wonderful material in terms of how dense its energy density is amazing. Mm. And that's why it powered the Industrial Revolution, mm-hmm. and it's powered climate change. So it's kind of a double-edged sword. But
gives and takes away.
Yeah. It's if you convert to burning wood instead of burning coal, you've got to put so much more wood in there. So you've got all of these extra truck movements to get in and get out to re-top up your boiler system. So why would you go through that extra logistical effort if you could just flick a switch and you're using electricity?
For sure. Now, some places have real attachment to fossil fuels. For instance, the West Coast. I know some people in Southland, where I'm originally from, definitely have some attachment because there's so much lignite down there. They're like, we could just dig it up and use it for energy. How do you get around that kind of culture of, you know, coal built this town, so we can't abandon it? Or how do you get around that sort of historical attachment to fossil fuels?
Yeah, that's it's a really important point. And I think that we talk about the needing to transition our economies to a lower emissions economy. And so that does mean moving away from fossil fuels and those extractive industries and trying to get into a more regenerative space. There's a lot of jobs in the electrification space.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there needs to be investment locally in understanding, you know, from the council, city councils, regional councils in those areas. They understand what their population is, what they want, and how they want to respond. So there needs to be that sort of grassroots driven, this is how we transition from a reliance on fossil fuel industry, fossil fuel powered jobs, to a more sustainable employment workforce.
Mm.
We're seeing that Taranaki is a really interesting case where they've had the natural gas fields for a long time, powering a lot of their employment and their sort of related industries. And they're going through a process which is sort of locally led about how do we transition to more sustainable energy and how can we be at the forefront of that. And similarly in Murihiku, Southland, a lot of the talks, particularly with the Tiwai smelter, does it stay or does it go? Mm. What happens to all of that energy from Manapouri, all that sort of renewable electricity? How could we be leading with some of these new industries? And I think there was about 5 different options to use up all of that energy, from like data centres to green hydrogen production and on and on. So there's all these sorts of options. Sometimes it's a matter of picking a path and bringing the workforce with you, retraining, and often, you know, these jobs are better. You're not, you know, going down a coal mine.
Mm.
You might be working on an electrolyzer,
way safer, yeah, for sure.
That's creating green hydrogen to power the trucks to move around and the buses to go to Milford Sound and all these sorts of things. So it's like, you know, it's a ripple effect where a greener industry is supporting other industries to be greener as well.
Yep. I think it was under Joe Biden's presidency with some of his sort of climate reforms. He tried to like get as many like former coal workers working on like huge wind farms, you know, because people who have been working in those extractive industries, they have to move on to another job. You can't just leave them behind.
Yeah.
You know, That's one thing you got to keep in mind. Now, the 3 events that are happening here next Tuesday from Electrify Dunedin. We have a networking lunch followed by a corridor with Mike Casey from Rewiring Aotearoa. Then there's another chat about electrifying your home and saving money on energy bills, hosted once more by Mike Casey. Which event do you think you're looking forward to the most?
I'm biased, but I'm organising the first event, the lunch event.
Lunch.
Yeah, oh. So in Aotearoa Dunedin, we've been wanting to have a sustainability professionals network for a while now. We had hoped that it would sort of coalesce out of the business school signing up with IEMA, which is an international accreditation for environmental education.
Mm-hmm.
Got a bit tricky trying to do something that was a branch of this international organisation, so we've kind of just said, well, let's just do it ourselves. So the Zero Carbon Alliance is sponsoring that lunch. So that's the university, the polytech, the hospital, the city council, the regional council, and the airport form that alliance.
Mm.
So lots of big sort of government-ish organisations that have net zero targets are working together to share data, share lessons, share experience. And we want to provide a similar forum more widely for people from other government organisations, from the private sector, and our students as well, who are undergrad, postgrad, but looking at, oh, I'd really like to work in sustainability, but I don't really know where to start. Maybe could I intern somewhere? How do I create that connection? Having a forum where we could put on some talks and just sort of share some of that knowledge, but also have lots of time for networking over some kai. So in that session we'll have Fam, who is a PhD student in the marketing department, who won the 3-minute thesis about sustainable packaging. So he'll give a rapid lightning talk there. We'll have Sarah Gell from the City Council Enterprise Dunedin talking about local food production, because it's an important kaupapa. And then another Sarah from Oxygen Consulting coming down from the North Island to talk about a New Zealand perspective on sustainability professionals. Hopefully that catalyses something and everyone goes, yeah, that was really great. And next time can we do this? And we get a whole bunch of ideas and then we can map out a program of events for next year. So we are piggybacking a little bit on the Electrify Dunedin coattails to get that event up and running, but it should be a good way to start the day. Then at 2 o'clock there's going to be a session, a business focused session on how to electrify your businesses. And there will be Mike Casey will talk at that, but also there will be other speakers from Dunedin, I think including Shane Jenkins, the energy manager from the university, talking about how we're using smart technology to find energy efficiency improvements that we can. So once you electrify, then what? How do you use the smarts of these systems to be able to just save more money and lower emissions? And then the final event is for households. So that's a totally public event. And it's like, what do you do within your household? What are some case studies that you can follow? So if you just Google Electrify Dunedin, 28th of October, you can find the details. They're all free to attend. It's really great if you register, so that for the ones where there's catering, we know how much kai to provide. But yeah, it should be a really great day of some really interesting kōrero.
How do people register for those other events?
Yeah, so there's a Humantics event set up for all three of those events. So if you just Google Electrify Dunedin, you should find that.
Cool, awesome. The I should note the Electrify Your Home seminar starts at 5 p.m. goes to 7:30 p.m. Thank you for your time and coming on the program, Craig. Do you have any final words or words of wisdom for our lovely audience?
Just those events are all at Toitū Otago Settlers Museum here in Otipoti. I'd love to see you on the day, and if you can't make it, but any of those concepts have sort of ignited an interest in you, you can reach out to me through the sustainability office, sustainability@otago.ac.nz. Love to hear from you.
Well, thank you for coming on the program, man. Appreciate it.
Kia ora.
That was Craig Cliff from the University of Otago's Centre for Sustainability talking about the Electrify Dunedin Public Showcase, which is happening next Tuesday at Toitū. It starts at 12:30. There's the professional sort of sustainability networking lunch at 12:30. Then at 2, there's a kōrero about electrifying your business. Then at 5, there's Electrify Your Home. Head on over to Humanitics Electrify Dunedin for more information and to register yourself. Craig.
That was a Radio 191 FM podcast. Find more at r1.co.nz.